And the sultans were really hard-pressed to fight back these invaders. And that had a lot to do with the structure of the Ubaidid state. That is, both Adil and Akhamil, who faced the Fifth Crusade, and then later, his name is Turan Shah, the last of the sultans. They had to not only depend on their Mamluk slave troops, who eventually did end the whole dynasty, but they also were never quite sure if their kinsmen in Syria and the Al Jazeera were going to kind of come to their rescue, or we're going to come in and overthrow them and then fight the Crusaders. So that the state that Saladin left behind him in some ways was politically very, very chancy as a long-term operation. And the failure of the Fourth Crusade to show up couldn't have happened at a more opportune time. On the other hand, these sultans did take a number of measures that would allow for a stronger, an institutionally stronger state, the so-called Mamluk state, to follow them. In 1250, the last of the Ubaidid sultans was overthrown after the Seventh Crusade had been defeated and King Louis had been captured. And at that point, a succession of tough professional generals, Mamluks, chosen by the military elite, took over. And when they took over, the rules really changed in the whole Islamic world. This was the first really effective institutional state. They may not have had the genius of a Saladin or a Nur ad-Din, but the Mamluks were going to essentially finish the Crusader period. Well, what did the Ubaidid sultans do to help in developing that axis of power in Cairo, which, as I said, is one of the two great axes that comes out of the Crusader period in the Islamic world? Well, one, Cairo emerged as a great metropolis. It started with Saladin and it continued through the 13th century. It had been a Fatimid capital. It had been, it was originally a military colony. It's Fustat in the earliest sources, which is an Arabic word for fosa. It had been established early in the 7th century. But Cairo is a great center of learning. As one of the great cities of the Near East, and Cairo still holds its reputation, and the Arabic spoken by the Cairo educated elite is to this day regarded as the most dignified and fashionable and literate of the Arabic dialects. This position begins to emerge in the 13th century. Cairo very quickly eclipses Baghdad. And Baghdad, as I had mentioned in earlier lectures, was on the decline for a variety of reasons. When the Mongols showed up in 1258, they really did simplify the situation by essentially leveling the city to the ground. The sultans developed important commercial links, I mentioned, with the Genoese and Venetians. And that was important for several reasons. The Genoese and the Venetians both prospered immensely from the Fourth Crusade and the Third Crusades. We have a separate lecture on that. They really did emerge as the big winners out of both of those crusades, more than any other group. And the Ubaidid sultans became very clever. They, just as the Venetians and the Genoese, appreciated the fact that we could trade without dealing with religious issues. And they, more than any other previous Islamic regime, really encouraged the establishment, especially of a Venetian factory in Alexandria, which is at the western branch of the Nile, the development of trade connections. And these trade connections were extremely important. And that goes back to the statement I made earlier. And that is, if you control Egypt, if that's your prime base of power, you always have a problem of getting access to that recruiting ground. Most of the slave troops that came into the Ubaidid domains and the city of Cairo came complements of Venetian and Genoese carrying trade. The Genoese had a lock on the trade connections in the Black Sea. And that gave them immediate and direct access to where many of these Turkish slaves were sold. And this slave trade continues long through the Middle Ages. They're actually importing domestics and into places like Italy and elsewhere. And there's a more active slave trade going on in the 14th and in early 15th century than most people realize. But they were bringing in the manpower necessary to staff those Muslim armies. At the same time, the Venetians particularly were responsible for bringing in silver specie. In the earlier lecture, I discussed the whole upsurge in minting, the mining operations going on at the end of the 12th, opening of the 13th century. Well, those Venetian traders based in Acre and then in Alexandria, those two centers, brought in a lot of the silver that sustained a very substantial silver currency, the first major silver currency in the Islamic world until, since, well, you know, the early 10th century. There's essentially a dearth of coined specie in the Islamic world for a couple of centuries before the Crusaders showed up. The Venetians are carrying that in. They're also carrying in timber. They're carrying in naval stores, pitch, metals, such as iron, and the metals necessary for the instruments of war. And the irony is that the Ayyubid Sultanate emerged far more powerful military power than it probably had a right to because of its alliance with the Italian mercantile republics, and that they came to depend on the Venetian and Genoese to bring in the material and manpower that made them the type of army that could repel crusaders. And there's a subtle irony here, and that explains a great deal why crusader warfare is going to go out of fashion, because at a certain point for the Genoese and Venetians, it isn't worth disrupting these trade routes.